Maude, she's the chairperson of the Council of Canadians. Let me just say, in brief, she's the recipient of dozens, if not hundreds, of awards, including at least a dozen honorary degrees. She's the author of many, many books. And here's some three things about Maude. Maude is a jogger. She's an incredible family person, loving mother, devoted mother, grandmother, and daughter of two parents who had a huge influence in her life. She knows how to party. She's the most fun board chair I've ever worked under. She's the hardest working activist I've ever met in my life. And I think she does the most important thing that any citizen can do in this world, and that's give people hope. Thanks, Maude. Ralph spoke about how the federal government's view is sort of hands-off, non-intervention, but in fact they're intervening quite actively on the issue of P3s by making privatization essentially a condition of being able to access funds. Maude, 10 years ago when we were here and when, you know, the Water Watch, domestic Water Watch movement really started to take off, we always knew that what was going on in Canada was very much connected to what was going on in other parts of the world. And I recall we were together at the second World Water Forum. I think it was about a year after the Water Watch Coalition was formed in 2000, I think it was. And there was we were trying to meet and lobby the official government delegation to the World Water Forum on the issue of water being a basic human right. And the resistance from the federal government was fierce and steadfast at that time, continues to be today. I'm wondering if you could tell us where is our government, our national government, at on the international scene? What's going on in the international scene? And why this continued opposition to what would seem like such an obvious thing, that water be considered a human right?
Well, thank you, Maureen, very much, and thank you for your beautiful introduction. I think it's the nicest one I ever had. I like those personal introductions very much. And you're right, I'm crazy about my grandkids. I actually could talk about them, but I won't, because that would really be boring. Yes, it's to Canada's eternal shame that we continue to take a position and not supporting the human right to water at the United Nations. The government will give you any one of a dozen reasons why we cannot support this. One argument they give is that it would force Canada to share our water with the United States, which is just nonsense. We have told them repeatedly, and we have legal opinions on this from legal scholars at the United Nations, that it is very clear that when you sign a treaty or a covenant at the United Nations, it's between you and your people. It is not does not require you one country to share resources with another. The more real reason that Canada will not sign the right to water, will not support this at the United Nations, is that it would conflict with our position that water is a tradable good under NAFTA. And that's the real reason, and the government won't admit this. I do have to say, though, that I think we're having success with other political parties than the current conservatives, and I think all are willing and ready to move now to some extent in if we could have a future government that was not a conservative majority. Please, please, please don't let that happen. But it's been a very distressing kind of thing to do that advising, as I did last year, to the 63rd president of the United Nations General Assembly, and to meet everywhere this kind of look of, you're here lobbying for this, and your own country still does not support it. So it's a blight, but it's a blight. I'm embarrassed. I think Paul spoke about this morning, that our government's been chastised by Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, for the position that we're taking going into the talks in Copenhagen. Turns out we are one of the top 10 pollution emitters in the world, and of course because we will not touch The tar sands of northern Alberta, we're going to distinguish ourselves by our cowardice and our despicable lack of a position. I'm mortified, and I don't understand why this is just not something that every Canadian is embarrassed about. I think perhaps it is. Doesn't seem to continue to translate into the polls, however, and I continue to be frightened about a conservative majority and what that's going to mean. So we do have our work cut out for us, and we certainly have to worry about and continue to be concerned about our position in terms of the change of Canada's international reputation. I would like to just add, however, two things. One is that we are actively promoting, as Blair said, not only actively promoting public-private partnerships, but we're actively promoting new trade agreements that are going to put our water services in jeopardy. And Paul spoke about it, but I just want to underline this, because I bet most people in this room have never heard of the Canada-European Union Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement. It's an agreement that's galloping forward. About 3 weeks ago, a month ago now, there were 200 negotiators from Europe in Canada for this negotiation. It is the government's contention that it's moving very quickly and it's going to come to an agreement in 2011. It is a more dangerous agreement than NAFTA, in my opinion, in terms of everything that we hold dear in this country, from the ability to set regulation, standards, and rules at the most local level, to the way we spend money at the most local level, to a direct assault on our services. Basically, what the European Union has said is that we're not interested in this agreement unless we can have access to what they call subnational procurement. That is all of the spending that's done at the provincial and municipal level right across the country. So that would include school boards and hospitals and universities and social services and, of course, in this case, water services. And you won't be surprised to know that Veolia and Suez, the two biggest water corporations in the world, are very, very keen on this, because it does mean they would have automatic access to challenge directly and compete for local utilities when they come up. Any new infrastructure development would not only have what Blair described, which is the federal government saying you're not going to get this funding unless you're looking to a public-private partnership, but now you'd have direct access by these two huge transnationals from Europe. And Europe has already gone through this subnational procurement process, and they are in the process of being forced to privatize transit and water and so on. Italy just passed a law now opening up the door for public-private partnerships for all new infrastructure development, all new services, and anytime one of them comes up for renewal. And they didn't want to do this. They were forced to, because there's a huge public movement for public water in Italy, but they said they were forced to do this because of the agreement that they've signed in Europe. So we need to be totally, not only vigilant on this, but we are going to be launching a campaign against this CETA, the Canada-European Union Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement. It's part of what I call a perfect storm of trade agreements, which includes the tightening up of the interprovincial agreement, the agreement on interprovincial trade, which the Europeans have also said has to be in place before they will agree with this. And they are looking at an investor state up a rights provision similar to the one in NAFTA, the Chapter 11, which would give any corporation across the country the right to seek compensation if when it goes to move into any other province, it finds higher standards. So goodbye all of the bottled water bans that we have put in place across the country. Just would be one automatic place that any of these companies, and don't forget Nestle is a European company and would have the right to challenge those bans anywhere that they find them in the country. And then we also have the move to get exempted from the Canada-US under the Obama's provisions in their stimulus package to encourage local buying. What we're willing to give up, apparently, is access again to these subnational levels of government. Blair and I have been fiddling around with the numbers, and we think it's anywhere between $100 and $200 billion. Worth of procurement. It's far, far vaster than the federal procurement. It was left out of NAFTA. And this is an extraordinarily dangerous thing. The last thing that I want to say is that I just want to add to the privatization here in Canada. I've actually made a list of 10 ways in which water is being or is threatened to be privatized in Canada. We've talked about the trade agreements, and it also, of course, with trade includes the fact that another NAFTA country's corporations operating in Canada have access to the water they're using now. So, for instance, the big energy companies operating in northern Alberta in the tar sands actually can claim that water. And if the government of Alberta were to say, well, we're going to cut your access in half, they would have the right to sue for financial compensation for potentially up to billions of dollars. So there's that in the public-private partnerships and services. There's also bottled water. We have a huge bottled water industry in Canada. There's also the Run of the River project in British Columbia, where they're privatizing public water by allowing private energy corporations to take control of all of the waterfalls in that province. The government has a new high technology plan for water, which is the technology will save us. And it's all part of this global contest between whether we will go the conservation route and watershed protection route, or we're just going to trust technology to save everything. It's a very dangerous thing. There's something new in the world called land grabs, where countries are buying up water and land in global south countries, particularly Africa. And the Globe and Mail is now saying Canada, in the name of free trade, should open up its provinces. The provinces should remove any legislation that would prevent these land grabs from coming here. They talk about, well, because we're hollowing out the countryside, so let's let these companies and other countries come in and own this land and water. There's Schedule 2, which is the allowance that mining companies can actually name a pristine piece of water now, a lake or an aquifer, as a tailing impoundment area and be allowed to destroy it. It's a form of privatization. There are the water markets that Irving spoke about in Alberta. Alberta's the first province in Canada to introduce water markets. It's extraordinarily dangerous and has to be one of our most important campaigns. And we have then the renewed calls for export of water, particularly the Economic Institute of Montreal in Quebec, calling for massive water, commercial water exports to the United States, and they'll take some of that, the proceeds from that, and sprinkle it in charity through Africa or somewhere, and that'll make it all right. And then the last is something called virtual water trade, and we're doing some research at the Council of Canadians on this, but this is the water that is used in the production of commodities or energy or mining or whatever that you then export out of the country. And we need to get a handle on that because it's another form of the private ownership and control of water. So just thinking that this is happening in other parts of the world has got to stop. As I'm starting to assess it, I think Canada's on the verge of massive water privatization in these 10 areas. And I think I'm very nervous about it, and I think we have to turn our attention to it in a really strong way. Thank you.
Just, you know, listening to all four of you, I have to say I'm having trouble collecting my thoughts, and it there's so much there. I guess one big, you know, question I have in response is why? Why is this happening? And I just would invite any one of you in a few seconds, give your analysis. It seems incredible that this situation continues. That seems so obviously, you know, that's so obvious that we need to fix it. Why is what's happening happening?
Is it the natural extension of the information age and globalization? Information age happened, globalization happened because of the information age. Governments are very, very slow to react. The private sector is very, very fast to react. So now the private sector is miles ahead of government in reacting to globalization. It's as simple as that.
I also think that, you know, water is an essential for all humans, for human life, for all species on the planet. And so it's something we all need. And therefore, the profit potential is immense. If to the extent that these corporations can privatize elements of it, there's vast potential profit that can be made. And so, you know, to the extent that they influence our governments, which they do mightily, we start to get these kinds of public policies, which, you know, Canadians in overwhelming numbers think are crazy and don't support, and yet they keep coming forward, and I think it's because there's a lot of money to be made.
The situation in First Nations is, I think, to a large extent, is a result of not being involved or not being able to share in the resources of this great country, which basically came out of the First Nations agreements, and the, I think the treaties are not being respected, and as a result, there's I think a notion that First Nations do not deserve that, and I think that is probably pervasive in the thinking at the high levels, that First Nations are okay, they don't need that. In fact, the First Nations live in third world countries, and I think Canada does not have a problem in accepting that notion that we do have third world conditions here in this country.
Well, I would just add, and I think Ralph said it in his opening remarks, which is that we've moved from thinking of the public good, and not only water, but in every area, to being competitive. And all of the functions of government have changed in a really profound way in the last 30 years to meet this. I mean, it used to be Agriculture Canada, now it's Agriculture and Agribusiness Canada. So, I mean, just the terms and the language, even Health Canada has a huge part of its mandate to promote health services and the competitiveness of health service corporations outside the country, which is why we've also changed, by the way, from maintaining rules around public pension funds. Public pension funds used to have to be used to promote either public services here or abroad. That's been changed. And I just came back from Chile, and I have to tell you, I'm embarrassed to say that where they have the greatest privatization of water services in the world, one of the legacies of the Pinochet regime, not only have they got total water markets, and just like you were talking about, Irving, they actually have public auctions where great big mining companies from Canada and other places come in and outbid local people and local indigenous communities and farmers, and they literally come in and pump the water out. I mean, that's the extent of it, and that's where it's going to go if we allow it to happen in Alberta or other places in Canada. But also, they also have privatized services. The biggest funder, the biggest investor in the world in Chile is the Ontario Teachers Public Pension Fund, and I'm just outraged by this. It's about 37% of the funding for private water services in Chile, which is denying water to anyone who cannot pay, is paid for out of public teachers' pension funds in this province. And so we really have to get a handle on this. It's not just, you know, some kind of amorphous thing out there. We really have moved from a notion of a public good, the notion that water and other public services are a public trust and a public service, to a competitive model. And you see it's through absolutely everything.
If I can add, those pension funds are investing in the companies that are doing that in Canada as well. You know, in the BC municipal plan, and a variety of others are investing in P3s too here at home.
And the public pension funds in British Columbia and elsewhere are also behind the opening up, and it's going to be just terrible destruction in Patagonia. They're putting in huge mega dams. It's one of the last untouched wilderness areas in the world, and it's just a massive invasion. And again, public pension funds in Canada are behind it. We have to get a hold of this issue. We really, really do.
So one thing we can all do, those of us covered by pension plans, is check out the investments of those pension plans, get control over the investments of the pension plans, and I suspect that includes the Canada pension plan that all working people would be part of, or in the people in the paid labor force.
It's true where we have, sorry to interrupt, where we have joint trusteeship, where unions have more control over the decisions, that you are able to influence the policies and to,
right,
you know, and then it's important that the plan members do what you're suggesting.
And with Canada Pension Plan, that we force the government to control the investment policies in a way that promotes public interest. I have a question in French, which I'm going to read in French, and then I'll translate it quickly for you in English. The question is, comment faire pour...
How can we do to avoid that we and the water services be included in the various trade agreements as we do, for example, in things like NAFTA? Alors,
to first of all avoid that water services are covered or included in international trade agreements, those that are still are under negotiation or where attempts to negotiate are taking place, and also what to do to actually get water services out where they're already covered, for example, under the NAFTA agreement. So, Maude, I wonder if I can put that question to you, and just to give you an idea, we have at least five or six questions I'm going to try to group together, and we have very little time left, so if we can keep our answers brief. And, of course, all these topics we will come back to in workshops, I think, later this morning. Maude?
Very, very briefly, we need to take water out of NAFTA. We have to remove other things in NAFTA, too, the ability of corporations to sue under Chapter 11. I don't think there's anything redeemable about this Canada-European Union comprehensive, economic and trade agreement. Yes, we should exempt NAFTA, but it shouldn't happen because it's putting all our public services in danger. There is a move at the WTO, and some of our people, Stuart True and Leo Broderick from the Council of Canadians and others from Canada, are in Geneva right now at the World Trade Organization and have a petition and a campaign to get water taken out of the WTO. So this needs to be a consistent theme, but it wouldn't be good enough just to take it out of this European agreement. We can't let it happen at all.
Thanks, Matt. I have a question that... that touches on the water in First Nations community. And Irving, I wonder if you could touch on this. There is a big question is, will First Nations communities and also, I guess, the Assembly of First Nations be able to resist the siren song of P3s, of public-private partnerships, given all the issues that you've described and the ever-presence, the vultures of the private sector coming in, supposedly to save the day for all of us. Will the community, First Nations communities, be able to exist? And also, related question, are there examples that you know of where resistance to P3s has in part succeeded because there have been public-public partnerships, partnerships between First Nations communities and municipal public utilities in neighboring municipalities? Do you know of those examples? But real concern around P3s and First Nation communities.
Thank you. And that certainly is a topic that has been thrust upon First Nations. And actually, the federal government at the through Indian Affairs Department has actually set up a private-public partnership department to spend a lot of time and hire a lot of people to try and make this happen in First Nations. To put this in front of First Nations, and as I mentioned earlier, the level of poverty, a lack of economic development in First Nation communities, many of are more than far removed from the center of population in Canada along the border. Many of these First Nations, many of our First Nations, obviously in northern communities, they have no access to economic development. To enter into a public partnership agreement means mortgaging their funding for 10 to 20 years, whatever that takes. And many times, that really just puts them into a hole. In other words, one of the big issues that First Nations have been dealing with is the 2% cap that the federal government put on First Nations funding since 1996. 2% barely keeps up, probably doesn't even keep up with inflation. And to be able to expect First Nations to enter in public-private partnerships with other industries outside parties is a very difficult proposition. Private industries look at the bottom line, and they're not interested in how that money is derived. So First Nations would be forced to mortgage their future funding to be able to do this. So and there's a lot of other issues, crises that First Nations have to deal with rather than having to deal with private-public partnerships in terms of what they feel is a fiduciary responsibility for the government to provide services to First Nations as covered under the treaties. That's not to say that in communities where they have enjoy access to economic development, they have probably, I would say, member two First Nation and Soyuz and Kamloops First Nations are probably some First Nations in Vancouver, BC, are very good examples of being able to move forward. How much of that is private-public partnerships, I couldn't say, but it certainly is an area to move very cautiously into to make sure that there's a equal partnership. But it certainly is not an answer to be able to fund the huge backlog in First Nations infrastructure for First Nations.
Thank you.
If I can supplement what Irving was saying on the question about public-public partnerships, there are examples of what are often referred to as joint use agreements. Eh? So one example I'm familiar with in British Columbia is between the city of Penticton and the Penticton Indian Band with regard to their sewage system. And you know, there's a way of coming to an agreement about financing and also a sharing of staffing resources, so that if the municipality has people that are well trained water sewer operators, they can work with the Aboriginal community in sharing some of that kind of expertise. And there are a number of those kinds of joint use agreements in the country, and I think that's a model we should be looking to more.
Great. We are just about out of time, and there are lots. And I want to end by giving each of you just a few seconds, and maybe you could, in your comments, reflect on. There have been a couple of questions about, the electoral system. Where are the political parties at? Is there any hope in being able to influence the federal government on these questions? Given that we have a first past the post, that comment was made here, that maybe some of the solution is to change the electoral system. But I wonder if you could each, just in a few seconds, say what you think, one thing you think we could do as citizens to change the state of water as it is now. So, Maud?
Well, I will just relate it to your question around politics. I said it a couple of times. I'm really very nervous about a conservative majority. I think if that happens, we're going to see the real Stephen Harper. I studied him a few years ago when he was still with the Reform and wrote an op-ed piece for the Toronto Star quoting some dreadful things that he and the National Citizens Coalition stood for, direct quotes. And we got lots of questions. Where'd you get that? Where'd you get that? When I went back to get it on the internet, it was all gone. It was wiped out. Now I kept them. But, I mean, that's a history they would like to erase. But the National Citizens Coalition, we must remember, which he was ahead of, came into being to destroy Medicare, to fight public health care. So we have, I think, a very dangerous situation, not just on water, but on our public services in general if this happens. We have been, all of us, working with all of the other parties. The NDP has taken a very, very good, progressive, proactive position on water. Would be very good on water as a human right, and also on the public trust, as would the Bloc be. The Liberals have moved a long way. I don't know that they're quite there yet on the right to water, because they still hear the argument on the other side, but they have taken a pretty good position on being prepared to look at a National Water Act, very much thanks to Ralph, who's done incredible work with them. So I think there is a room for movement here, but we must not allow a Harper majority. I just can't say it strongly enough. I'm really frightened about what it would mean in every single way.
So Irving, in 10 seconds, one thing.
Yeah, 10 seconds. This is a minefield for me. It's better left to the politicians and the national chief to respond that. But in a few short words, AFN has to be seen as a nonpartisan organization advocating for all First Nations. And I think we have, as we have a long history in Canada prior to the Europeans, we have worked with every government that has has been in place since then. So, and we'll continue to work the best with the current regimes that are in place.
Thank you very much. Ralph?
Okay, just one thing. In Canada, we have a kind of silly legal system where governments don't have to implement their own laws if they choose as a matter of policy not to. The one thing we need in Canada is a new water contract that's binding, and the best way of, and one that gets right to the bottom line, which is the preservation of water, the essence of water for the use and enjoyment of everybody, not just the rich. And the best prospect we have of that is something akin to public trust law, which is in place in most U.S. states, but is not in Canada.
Thank you. Larry?
I think there's actually quite a bit of hope of our ability to do this, and the hope that I have is based on our success that we've had over the last 10 years that we've talked about at stopping the privatization of water in so many communities in the country. And that's been done because Canadians in the community, when they hear about these kinds of problems, they come out, they're active, they're engaged, and they persuade the politicians to back off of these ideas. So I think we need to take that model and replicate it on the federal scene, and we need to make it the case that every political party hears that we and our neighbors feel strongly this way, and we need to then make these water issues an issue in the next federal election and every federal election after that.
Thank you very much to the panelists in this great morning.